from WJCT in Jacksonville. This is our weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. I'm your host, Vince Kong, and this is Redux. It's April 21st, and Downtown Investment is back in the spotlight. This time, a certain owner of a certain Jacksonville football team is at the helm, and we have the details. Then on this episode of Redux, Earth Day is this weekend, and its purpose is to demonstrate support for environmental protection. But no matter where you stand on the issue, residents of St. Augustine have a very practical reason to care, especially if you live anywhere near the shore. We'll also bring you an update on the medical marijuana policy debate going on right now in Tallahassee. And finally, the Urban Core appears to be on the cusp of a renaissance. We'll bring you a piece about the ballet in La Villa, and then we'll bring you up to date on what's coming soon to Springfield. But first, some news. Kicking things off, the Duval County School Board met this past week to talk about the almost certain departure of its superintendent, Nikolai Vitti. As WJCT's Lindsay Kilbride reports, the Detroit School Board voted this past week to offer Vitti the same job as its district superintendent.
Duval School Board Chair Paula Wright says her main reason for calling the meeting was to talk about ensuring Vitti's potential departure doesn't cause disruption, especially as students are taking state tests this month.
And we want to make certain that all of our school environments are calm, focused, so our students can do the very best on the assessment.
Board member Scott Shine proposed trying to keep Vitti. He says Vitti's been rated an effective leader in board evaluations, and it's worth a conversation with him about what that would take.
To me, it makes more sense to try to keep an effective superintendent that we have today as opposed to try to find one from the workplace in the national spectrum.
However, other board members didn't agree. Lori Hershey and Becky Couch say they don't think it's likely Vitti would consider staying because he's voiced wanting to go back to Detroit, close to where he grew up. And Wright says he echoed that sentiment Wednesday morning.
In his voice today, we talked, he is thrilled to have this opportunity to go home.
Vitti wasn't at the meeting, but in an email to WJCT, he says he will begin contract negotiations with Detroit as soon as possible. He also says he feels like he's been drafted by his home team. The Duval board plans to continue discussing next steps on Friday. Lindsay Kilbride, WJCT News.
To update a story from a previous podcast about downtown development, in particular the Shipyards Project, Jacksonville's Downtown Investment Authority moved forward with a plan to redevelop 70 acres of riverfront property. As WJCT's Ryan Bank reports, officials gave the green light to Iguana Investment, that's the investment firm of Jaguars owner Shad Khan.
Khan's Iguana Investments proposal wasn't the only one to include a mixed-use residential and entertainment district, but DIA CEO Andra Wallace says it was the only group with pockets deep enough to get it done fast.
There are quite a lot of similarities between the actual proposals itself, but it always gets down to who's going to have the financial pocket to actually get the project done and who has various different experiences of some of the elements that's actually being proposed, and that is exactly what how things weighed out.
The Iguana proposal scored a full 20 points higher than its closest competitor on DIA's rubric. Second place was a Presidium Group plan to build a fine art museum, aquarium, and 1,000-foot observation deck, along with retail and residential space. A West Holdings plan to create an innovation district, which would act as a jobs factory, combining some retail space with a tech startup hub, came in third. DIA board members decided Presidium's idea wouldn't contribute as much to the local economy as Iguana's, and the innovation district idea didn't seem as clearly conceived. But some board members expressed apprehension about the Iguana proposal that calls for sweeping exemptions to city planning laws and moving Metropolitan Park to the west. Jaguars President Mark Lamping, representing Iguana Investments, says it's all up for negotiation.
You know, there's going to be a dialogue and there's going to be a lot of give and take from where we are today. Again, it's just the next step that we took today. It's not the final step, by any stretch of the imagination.
Eguana Investments and city officials will now begin an 18-month process that includes another investment authority vote and final city council approval. Ryan Bank, WJCT News.
Yes, yesterday was April 20th, or 420 for those in the know, and for Florida patients with certain ailments, they may be able to vape or munch on medical marijuana products, but they almost certainly won't be able to light up joints or take bong hits. That's under a compromise being worked on by State House and Senate leaders. WJCT's Jessica Palumbo explains.
After Florida voters last fall legalized medical marijuana for patients with a broad array of conditions, state lawmakers are now trying to reach consensus on how to carry out that constitutional amendment. House and Senate committees this week approved two different approaches, but neither side has any intention of allowing the marijuana to be smoked. That's despite repeated demands from patients and caregivers who insist smoking provides some patients the most relief. Fleming Island Republican Senator Rob Bradley this week said smoking is off the table because the legislature doesn't think it's healthy. Among the sticking points between the two chambers is a Senate amendment capping the number of marijuana dispensaries each grower could operate to 3. The two chambers must agree on a single version of the bill before Amendment 2 goes into effect later this year. Jessica Palumbo, WJCT News.
Now, in honor of Earth Day, let's take a look at a problem in the nation's oldest city: sea level rise. Nuisance flooding, or a kind way of saying random flooding in the absence of rain, is now common in St. Augustine. As an example, the recent storm surge from Hurricane Matthew extended all the way to US 1, and that wasn't even from a direct hit. While the federal and state governments continue debating the role of humans in climate change, the city's leadership is opting to take the high road, that is, focusing its energy dealing with the fact that water is in fact rising. And the problem is more than a simple philosophical debate, it's a public works and infrastructure problem. St. Augustine's Mayor Nancy Shaver joined First Coast Connect earlier this past week to explain.
We focus on the NOAA models, and we look at the medium-high model. And what that tells us is sometime in the next 20 years, we'll have a foot of sea level rise. That is has a huge impact on St. Augustine. Much of St. Augustine, or not much, but a significant piece of it is fill. And the ocean takes that fill back. Flagler College is built on fill dirt. Our City Hall, the Leitner Museum are fill. The Davis Shores neighborhood is fill. So we know where we're at risk. And once that ice cap data gets into the NOAA models, we'll have a much better understanding of timing. But quite frankly, we need to start planning right now.
And Shaver said, while St. Augustine braces for the inevitable, in the short term, the focus is this.
It's sewage. And for us, our wastewater treatment plant sits right on the Maria Sanchez Creek. And we know, based on the work that we've done, that we're going to have to relocate a sewer plant. For a city of 14,000 folks with an annual budget of $50 million, we're looking at something north of $100 million. And without state and federal help, There's really no way we can afford to do that.
Shaver is enlisting statewide support through a group she helped create called Resiliency Florida. Part of its mission is getting the folks in Tallahassee on board.
I had a conversation with Governor Scott, and while Governor Scott certainly is not on the same page in terms of climate change, he's a very practical businessman, and I'm a business person as well. And he said, I really will focus on solutions. I'm willing to do that. I think the real barrier right now, quite frankly, is the legislature. We proposed a stormwater management pilot that went nowhere. And I'm hopeful that the legislature will come to understand, and quite frankly, it'll be clear in not too many years.
And what will be clear, she added, is that there will be lots of tough decisions ahead.
I think we have to be realistic about it. We don't know how quickly it's going to come. It's quite certain that it's going to come. So abandonment is part of what you plan for. In Miami, they've spent over $300 million on a small portion of roadway and elevating that roadway and drainage and other utilities. So there's a point at which the investment is not going to make sense. We don't know when that is. And I'd much rather focus on doing the simple but expensive pieces that municipalities have to do, move services inland.
Visit the Redux page at wjctnews.org to hear the entire interview. We'll also hear from you, our listeners, throughout the rest of this podcast on the subject of rising sea levels along the First Coast.
Are the liberation of hip-hop. Poets, pushing pen to paper.
Author, poet, hip-hop artist, activist, and educator, there's very little Jacksonville's Ebony Payne English can't do, except maybe stay stagnant. Tune in to Indie Endeavor with Ryan Bank Tuesday at 11 p.m. for a special on all things spoken word. WJCT, your community, your world, your music.
Stereotypes, typecast and radio play, well-rehearsed lines reverberate across the airways.
I think it's interesting that Mayor Curry's pension reform plan just came out and kicks the can down the road for the major funding to just about the time when I expect Jacksonville is going to be facing its own issues with sea level rise. I don't know what planning has gone into the pension fund, taking into account the kinds of infrastructure changes and improvements that are going to be necessary to address the issues attendant to sea level rise. It's a statewide issue. There's $800 billion of real estate at risk.
That was one of our callers, Dave from Ponte Vedra Beach, and his thoughts on sea level rise along the First Coast. And now, Jacksonville's Ritz Theater and Museum is playing host to an exhibit detailing 40 years of the historical dance theater of Harlem, one of the country's first predominantly black ballet companies. WJCT's Lindsay Kilbride got a behind-the-scenes sneak peek to bring you this report.
The Dance Theater of Harlem was founded in 1969, and as Ritz Museum Administrator Adonica Toller says, it was as much an art outlet as a civil rights movement.
Arthur Mitchell, one of the founders, he was the first African-American principal dancer of a major ballet company, and he wanted to prove that African-Americans could be classical dancers.
That's the first African-American male. The dance company allowed kids in Harlem to learn ballet in their own neighborhood. Photos of him and his dancers over the years are being attached to the walls along with old posters and costumes.
We do have some Jacksonville natives who have danced with the company. Savory Morgan is one of them.
The whole spirit of Dance Theater of Harlem is so important because it's not just, you know, African Americans during dance or, you know, we have to fight this. No, it's not about any of that. It's about anybody that wants to do classical art can do it if they put in the time and work.
Morgan danced with the company for about a year and a half. Now he's standing in its exhibit.
Have you had a chance to kind of browse it yet?
I love all of them. But I guess one of my favorites would be the Giselle, just because it was the first one that I saw.
That's Creole Giselle, a heartbreaking romance story set in Louisiana. Behind Morgan, there's a floor-to-ceiling black-and-white photograph from the ballet.
I am right here. Oh my goodness.
And Angeli Austin, a former Giselle dancer, is here at the Ritz with Morgan. She's pointing to herself in a cast photo from the ballet.
I actually was a little emotional coming through here because so many memories flooded back, because what you see is the finished product. What's unseen is the hours of work.
Austin danced for the Harlem Company from 77 to 1990. The exhibit runs through the end of July. Lindsay Kilbride, WJCT News.
I am somewhat in sympathy with focusing sea level rise as a pocketbook issue, but my concern is that by doing so, perhaps we are addressing the symptom of the problem rather than addressing the underlying problem itself, which I think to be global warming.
That was one of our callers, Peter from the Beaches, sharing his thoughts on sea level rise along the first coast. And finally, Jacksonville's Springfield neighborhood is rapidly growing as new businesses continue to open along Main Street and the surrounding corridors. As Amy Haddon reports, 10 small new businesses are expected to open within the end of this year, some as early as next month.
Hyperion Brewing Company is breathing new life into a store on the corner of 8th and Main. It is just one of many small businesses planting roots in the historic Jacksonville neighborhood. Hyperion initially faced some resistance from city churches, but brewer Troy Orton says they're not representative of the religious congregations nearby.
The churches have been really supportive. They're just happy to see growth and change in the neighborhood. And an increase in business also can mean an increase in their congregation, bringing people back to Springfield.
Pastor Susan Rogers of the Well at Springfield says she does not see the breweries as a threat to the family-friendly environment.
I more see them as bringing people into the neighborhood to contribute to the economy of Springfield, which is something that we desperately need.
Breweries are not the only new businesses calling Springfield home. Across the street from Hyperion is Crispy's, a new Italian restaurant. And Main Street is also home to everything from a new credit union to the Block Skate Supply, a skateboard shop relocating from the Riverside area. Many of the new developments are owned by Springfield residents. Springfield Preservation and Revitalization spokeswoman Jamie Torreson says the diversity of businesses is refreshing in a neighborhood that struggled in years past.
Some of these businesses have been here 3 decades or more, and they're thriving businesses. So it's exciting to see how excited they are, too, about businesses coming because, you know, as everyone improves, it rises the whole community.
Torreson says commercial landlords in the area are eager to attract more tenants. So she expects this to be just the beginning of Springfield's much-awaited growth spurt. Amy Haddon, WJCT News.
And that's our show. You can find all of our audio and web stories at wjctnews.org. You can also stream this podcast as well as all of our on-air content on the WJCT app, which is available on iTunes and the Google Play Store. And of course, find us on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. I'm Vince Kong, and thank you for listening.